So hi everybody, welcome along to this module called Presenting the Path. And those of you online, good evening and welcome. So we begin as we normally do by taking refuge and generating the mind of enlightenment. We'll say the preliminary prayers together and then we'll engage in the topic for this evening. And as you know, during the class there's moments for questioning and also for meditation. Okay, so yeah, get comfortable in your seat. Now, what's of primary importance is that your back is straight, and you're just sitting relaxed on your knees. Once you are sitting in a relaxed state, just let your body breathe itself. As the body continues to breathe itself, become aware of any movements it makes during the exhalation and inhalation process. So we're noticing movement and feeling. And with the body relaxed and the mind focused, imagine that directly in front of you, about the level of your eyebrows, appears Shakyamuni Buddha sitting on a golden throne. And see that he is surrounded by many other spiritual teachers. There are teachers of the lineage as your own personal teacher. There are other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, meditational deities, arhats, and protectors. And surrounding you, at the level of the ground, or the level of the seat, are all sentient beings. These include your parents, friends, and strangers, and difficult people. Recollect what we have in common with one another. And recollect that the causes of suffering can be eliminated and the potential for genuine happiness, which abides equally within all of us, can be brought to fruition, meaning we have the potential to achieve our Buddhahood, which will benefit ourselves and be of great benefit to others. So think this is what you'd like to do. You want to develop your wisdom, your compassion, every other skill you have to put an end to your own suffering and its causes and to help others do the same. So the means to accomplish the goal of Buddhahood is for us to rely upon authentic teachers, their teachings, and they as a spiritual community. So to do this seriously, join me in the refuge prayer and the generation of the mind of enlightenment. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create to listen to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In responses, wish of ours, see that lights and nectar stream forth from the heart of each enlightened being above you. These lights and nectars pour over you and over all the people surrounding you. And these lights and nectars wash away every obstacle and hindrance to your spiritual practice. potential for full awakening is awakened. Then you recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of compassion, love, joy, and equanimity. Decide to establish all beings in mind states. And to affirm this, you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Again, from the heart of each enlightened being above you, like a nectar stream down, they wash over you and all the people surrounding you, removing obstacles and hindrances to spiritual practice. And now you recollect the field of merit above you, the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, all enlightened beings, and with faith and devotion, prepare yourself to purify the mind, accumulate the merit, and increase the merit. So in front of this great field of enlightened beings, you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and other spirits to the great enlightenment. So now, to prevent ourselves from clinging to the practices we've already done, imagine that you yourself, the environment around you, all the merit that you've created are utterly transformed through the wisdom realizing emptiness and reappears as a pure land where you'll give teachings to others in the future. And you say, this ground, anointed with perfume, stirring with flowers, adorned with birds of merit, four continents of silence. I imagine this as a Buddha field of offer. May all living beings enjoy its pure land. So you've released this offering, and the Buddha has accepted it with joy, and he smiles at you. And you look up into his gaze, you meet his eyes, you affirm your goal, which is Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. And you feel as if he's accepted this wish of yours. And you feel completely at ease. Then an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart. It moves through space and comes to the bottom of the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. Now the emanation begins to descend down to the level of your heart. At the level of your heart, the emanation expands, filling your body and mind with lights and nectars. Stream out through the pores of your skin, filling the 10 directions of space. And establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. And pervading this great empty state, you can hear the sound of Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra resounding. And you begin to recite, saying, Tathā Om Muni Muni Maha Buddhaya Svaha. Tathā Om Muni Muni Maha Buddhaya Svaha. Tathā Om Mahamunaya Svaha. Tao cho ông mười mười ma mười sáu lesson. You yourself have control over the sufferings of the lower realms and mistaken identities, mastery over all sufferings and self-cherishing thoughts, great mastery over the subtle illusions of dualistic thinking. And so of all sentient beings. And now from the 10 directions of space, the light withdraws and re-enters your heart. And you can hear sounds and feel the pressure of the seat beneath you. You know that you are embodied. And the meditation you've done is one of imagination. And this imagination has imprinted the mind with this potential to actually be to come to fruition. So I think that you've done something meaningful and worthwhile, and you continue to keep doing so by actually engaging each stage of the path to accomplish enlightenment for yourself and help others do the same. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth. And just let your eyes flutter open, move your body in whichever way you'd like to, and feel at ease once again. Okay, so let's have a look at what we've covered. We began with some Buddhist history. We talked about the development of the Buddha Dharma in India, Tibet, and then throughout the world. And we looked at the text for A Lamp for the Path to Enlightenment by Lama Atisha, from which all the lamb rooms originate. Then we looked at the 12 deeds, and we know that this is not a history but a hagiography, in other words, a teaching aid. We've been introduced to the three ways of correctly listening, the three ways of incorrectly listening, and the six right ways of listening. And you know this outline for the foundation of all good qualities. Then we look at the three capacities of beings. And we began last week by looking at the capacity of people at small scope. Now, this week, I'm sort of relying on these texts here. This door of liberation and the lamb room graduated path to enlightenment and the book called Preparing for Tantra all have commentaries on this text for foundation of all good qualities. And the other two books are the stuff I've used to contribute to this, the rest of this material for the class. But today we'll be looking at these practices for a person of small capacity, but this time looking at it from the point of view of the of verses 3 and 4. Now, as you know, the initial level of practitioner, a person of small scope, their direct aim is to achieve this fortuitous rebirth. In other words, they're trying to avoid a rebirth where they find themselves in lower realms of suffering, and they want to achieve a higher realm rebirth as a human being with leisure and opportunity, or else find themselves in the gold realms. Now, to achieve this goal, what they primarily do is to pacify the coarse, harmful thoughts, words, and deeds. And these coarse, harmful thoughts, words, and deeds, what they call the 10 non-virtues. They want to pacify them, and then they replace them with the 10 virtues. So like I said, what they're basically abandoning is these gross mistaken deeds, words, and thoughts like killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, with and malice, envy, wrong views in terms of thinking. But can anybody remember what the four non-virtues of speech are? Lying?
Harsh
speech?
Divisive speech?
Divisive speech?
Vital gossip.
Vital gossip, excellent.
What was the fourth one?
Yeah, so this is what they're trying to do. And there's another slide coming up shortly. There's also meditations they need to do to actually even come up with this direct aim. So this Lamasong Kapa's foundational good qualities is made up of these 14 verses. We talked about the first two last week. We began by saying that the foundation of all good qualities is the kind of venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, it is best to rely upon him with great respect. And then we actually had this verse about precious human rebirth. Can anybody know what that verse is? How to say it? Verse 2? Good, let's go. Understand?
That's not the first one.
Yeah. Understand that the precious fruit of
the three word the sound only once is great.
That's it. That's it. Great. Come on. Yeah, yeah. That's the one you do. Help one of them. You know that. That's right. That's what we sort of looked at last week. Right? And so today we're going to these actual practices with this person of small scope. So there's 10 verses go through these three scopes. Today we're looking at first of the small scopes, so that's verses 3 and 4. Middling scopes has this two verses, 5 and 6. The great, I think it's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yep, 6 verses for the mind of enlightenment or the great scope of the Mahayana. Then we finish off with these two verses, a request and a prayer. So we'll go through each of these, like today, small capacity, next week, middling, then great. Here's our next slide for the initial level. So to have this wish to actually avoid lower realm rebirth and achieve a higher realm rebirth, there are meditations we need to become familiar with. And these are here, precious human life, so it's like, what is that? What's it look like? Death and impermanence, and then unfortunate rebirth. We familiarize ourselves with that to end up with this motivation to have the fortunate rebirth. So once we have this idea, like that's what I actually want to make sure I have that, right? Then it's like, now what do I do? What am I meditating on now? And that's where we come to taking refuge in the three jewels and observing the law of karma and suffering. Does this sort of make sense to you, this progression? Yeah, so this progression was taken out of one of the books that I put up there. I think it was the Foundations of the Buddhist Foundation of Buddhist Practice or Approaching the Buddhist Path. Foundation, I think. It's in there. So those books are really good. They have it all set out in tables, like if you just catch them on one page. So now let's begin with our lowest lock up is verse 3. And in that he says, this life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes? After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Now if you look at what's the essential point of the verse, or what's it trying to get us to do, is to sort of acknowledge and then prevent that this is a meaningless thought which seeks only the comfort of this life. Geshe Wangyal, who's author of one of the books that we showed, he says this human life with its leisure is not dependable. But inner and outer circumstances do not allow us to stay as we are. And in each moment, the life flow fluctuates, moving towards death. We perish as quickly as the bubbles in a puddle of rainwater. Now, I just found interesting. You know, when I first saw like a bubble in water, and I was like, what do you guys see?
Doesn't even
happen. Sure.
Is there even such a thing?
Yeah. You do it in the bath. You don't have any bubbles in the bath. No, they don't last long, but you see them in the water.
Like my little niece blows bubbles.
Yeah.
So
you
see like the bubble floating
that's coming. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, so that's the image, right? That's not the image meant here. So what the image is, you know, if you see this, like when it rains, and then you get the, so puddles form across the flat surfaces, and the rain keeps hitting it, and then the bubbles form then. Right? The bubble is forming because the rain strikes it. Right? And then it comes up as God. So that was a real experience the other day in the shower, right? So I'm looking, I'm just, you know, it's coming down like it. And I'm looking down, and I can see the bubbles go, like forming and going out. I'm going, Jesus, that's it.
That's life.
Yeah, that's life. It's like that. Mm-hmm. Like each one of them is just going, coming. Yeah, so imagine, I was looking at it going, man, look, what I was looking at, what are all those little black specks on the bottom of the shower, right? It was just the power of the shower water hitting the bottom, going down, it looked like a little black dot, and it just vanished. One after another, I'd go, oh my God, that's what they mean by the bubbles. As you know, if you've ever seen that, it does not last very long. So, yeah, like I said, like the verse 2 talks, we've got this wonderful opportunity, this life with solutions, opportunities to engage in the past, make this life meaningful. Now it says, well, that what you've got is coming into existence and going out so quickly. It's like, you know, rain striking puddles and forming puddles. Puddles.
Is that also pointing to that thing that causes that bring something into existence, also the same as what bring it.
That's the same. Yeah, you pull these together. That's right, Ben. So Ben pointed out an interesting thing here. You'll discover this yourself as you go through. You can see how teachings are interrelated. They, what is it? It's one of the great pieces of the Lamrim Chenlo is if you pull any part of it, the rest moves. It's like a mat, you know, you come to a big mat and you have a thread and you pull a little thread, the whole mat moves. They're saying this is right, each teaching is interrelated with everything else that goes through. So you see what Ben just said there, like impermanence, that's the conventional answer, goes right through every object of the past, the self, everything you practice. It's all impermanent. It's subtly impermanent, as Ben said, coming in and going out. The other thing you'll also recognize over time, it's all empty because everything is dependent on something else. It's all causes and conditions, or your mind is involved. Everything depends on something else. But there's another thing that goes right through everything as well. So, and like I said, over time, this will dawn on your consciousness and you'll go, whoa. So, whoa, strange world I'm living in. So Hesse's repeatedly contemplating impermanence, remembering that we have no power to remain forever and no certainty as to when we will die. The way to achieve final happiness is to be unattached to worldly activities or to this life's bodily enjoyments. For these are like chaff in the wind and will be no benefit in the future. You know, I was thinking about this, not quite because of slime, but this morning I had this thought, you know, man, it's really easy to not want to have the sufferings of psychic existence, but it's not so easy to give up the joys and the pleasures of psychic existence. That's the one we were going, no, I just want to keep that. There's nothing to actually be kept, you can't keep any of it. But, you know, there's that sort of wish somehow. Seeing is that after death, just like a shadow follows the body. Because after death, nothing except our inclinations residing in our stream of consciousness remains, and we must take rebirth. As a result, the karma accumulated by good and bad deeds perceives us as a shadow follows the body. Therefore, decide to practice only Dharma from this time on. And with respect to karma, there are the 10 non-virtuous actions and the 10 virtuous ones. We must avoid the former and practice the latter. In short, you must face the wretched results of non-virtuous karma, for the deed done will not decay, and there is no way to avoid their effects. These effects will, in fact, multiply. And he says, you must firmly believe in these true words of the compassionate teacher. In the Lamrim Chenlo, and the text after text after text, This is the presentation that's often made. It says that it teaches 3 points about death, and then there are the 9 points that follow on the conclusions way. So the 3 points about death are that death is certain. He gives 3 reasons for this, saying that the Lord of death will definitely come. So here we're personifying death to be like, you know, the guy with the axe or the big pitchfork or something. Yeah. We will definitely meet death. Our lifetime cannot be extended and constantly diminishes, which seems quite strange because when we're young, we just want to go old up, don't we? But then we get old, we find we're just going the other way. And while we are alive, there is very little time for practice. As Ian was saying, I heard you guys talk up there, so had to wait till retirement before you actually get time, because we have to work, people work, or have to look after families. Really difficult to have time to practice Dharma. It sure is. Yeah. And then he says, this is the most important one of these three, that the time of death is uncertain. And in fact, the lifespan in this world is uncertain. We know that, don't we? We know babies can die in the womb. You can die as soon as you're born. You can die at any time, basically. And many, there's still times now, isn't there, when we don't even know what the cause of the death is. I remember a number of years ago, a young Aboriginal woman, athlete, she was 14, running down the track, she stopped down there. They never found what the cause was. Yeah, holy heck. So, yeah, from any time. Because the causes of death are very many and the causes of life very few. And lastly, the body itself is very fragile. So my dad died by getting a little prick in his foot while he was gardening.
What?
Yeah.
Getting
pictures. Yeah, there's some creature in the earth and zip. The next thing within days, blood poisoning went up, couldn't save his legs, and actually, you're gone. That was it. About 3 days. And nothing in order to do. Just can't do anything. Yeah. So it's just like that. And lastly, of course, only Dharma practice helps at the time of death. Now, like I said, I'm looking after a couple of guys now who are dying, and there's only so much you can do. You know, as much as you want to help, you can't help so much that they won't die. Help be done. No matter how much money or medicines you've got all around, it makes no difference. You've got to go. And yeah, the body that we've supported all through our lives, we do look after our body, don't we? Now's the time it gives up on us. No matter what else we do with it, it's of no help to us. And so then, the practice you want to do now is have no clinging, no attention, make it as pure as you can. So these are the three, like I said, most important points. You know, like I said, the three sort of reasons that support each one. And each one leads to a decision. I'll just repeat the decisions again. In relation to death is certain, I must practice the Dharma. The time of death is uncertain, I must practice the Dharma right now. Only Dharma practice helps at the time of death. The Dharma practice, our practice, must be pure. So we just, what real pure Dharma practice is practice with acknowledgement of the three spheres of the emptiness of the self, what you're doing, and the goal. Now, we might not have that, right? But we can at least know that we do our very best not to have clinging and grasping manifest at the time of death. You know what Rabina said, was great, said, okay, we can't get rid of the clinging and grasping, then grasp at a pure land. Grasp at heaven. And it makes it because it's still virtue. It's only emptiness that gets us out. So we don't have it. We better grasp for our virtue. No harm there, right? But it'll at least make sure we achieve a good rebirth. And that's the most important, really important thing here. Like I said before, one time Kinsa Rinpoche said, if you find yourself in the body of a cat or something, understand you just wasted that last life. That was a real wow, man. That really shocked me. That's right. All the stuff we're doing and trying to, making the effort. And then, negative mind arises at the time of death or fear or something, and you get the consequence. Well, here, the goal here is to achieve this. What we want to do is achieve this rebirth as a human being with leisure and opportunity.
Right.
So you die with a wish to achieve enlightenment. That's a natural spirit.
Yeah.
That's going to result in that, because we don't have the wisdom. We might not have the actual mind of enlightenment, so it's not going to produce better outcomes. But you will get a higher realm rebirth. Yeah, so you know, ideally die with the mind that, a mind that seeks enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. But again, you know, we should do as such. Ideally, that's the way to go. However, you should check yourself and go, is it the actual mind of enlightenment or a similitude of it? But this is up for you guys, you know, all of us to discern ourselves, isn't it? And remember, if you've got that actual mind of enlightenment, you've also got renunciation. So that's a real good. That's good. But again, it's if we don't have the wisdom realizing emptiness, it's great, because we will at least achieve our goal here. I am our rebirth. I remember this guy, as a story, but like this. I read biographies quite a lot, so I read the biography. I like reading biographies of sports people. So I read this biography of these two different boxers. Right? So one boxer, he wanted to provide a house for his mother. That was his whole goal of boxing. Right? He wasn't able to do that. He didn't make enough money to do that. This other guy, he wanted to become the world champion. So he never achieved world championship either, but he was able to buy his mother a house. And I think, yeah, that's right. Aim real high, because you might reach something else along the way. And that's this idea here. Even though you might not have an actual mind of enlightenment, we should still go through the stage and think, no, but even though I don't have it, but I'd love to have it. Like, that's the best, one of the best mental states you could ever develop as a human being. I can't think of a better one. So at least, you know, even if it's not from the heart, it's still from the mouth, that you try and make your behavior accordance with the actual thing. Now, the next question is, there's a question that comes up, and it is, why meditate on the lower realms? Because people don't actually like to do this, but makes them really uncomfortable. But the essential point is to be afraid of dying right now under the control of your own disturbing emotions, because that's the phenomenon that pushes you into the lower realms. It's your own mind that is under the control of a disturbing emotion. Now, and in response to that fear, act now so you'll be without fear later. It's a bit like another analogy. What can anybody think of an analogy that's a bit like this?
But also, if you're an emergency doctor or a nurse, and then someone comes in and there's blood and guts everywhere, yeah, you just go bang.
Yeah, but we don't actually go in the doctor.
Yeah, the idea is, as you probably know, you want to be, if you're going to be scared, which you are going to be, right? Get scared now so that you're not scared later. You get scared now, so you get scared now, and in response to the fear now, you work your stuff.
Yeah.
You go, okay, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to, and this is what you do. And so you keep training and do it, so your fear diminishes more and more. I know what to do. Now we chuck you out of the airplane, you're not scared, you just do what you need to do.
Except we can't meditate on dying. We can't practice dying.
Oh yeah, we can.
So we can, but beyond meditation, how do you truly? Because when you're assuming when you're dying,
mm-hmm,
that's you can't truly practice that beforehand, right?
You can. Yeah. And there's different levels of how you practice it too. So there's a lot of ones that are just pure imagination, but at the same time, it's not like you have your imagination like you're separate watching it. If you're going to go, no, it's you. This is the sort of thing you're trying to measure as much as possible to get the actual physical reactions to it, right? And then go, okay, now, and this is what, this is all you have to do to stop all of that. So when you, what's really important here is to actually be afraid. But you need that fear and then respond to it in the proper way, you know? And so I've read a lot of, you know, biographies, also read stories about people who have been in battles and wars, and I like to know what people do with their mind under stress. And so this guy was saying, yeah, he says, if anybody says they're not afraid, they're either lying to you or they're really stupid, because this is a place where you should be very afraid, because if you are, you might live.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you'll be forced, you die. Right? So they teach you, what to do under these very fearful circumstances. Now, when you meditate on the lower realms, of course, it's a little different. But like I said, the idea is to know what to expect, thereby to take measures to avoid that thing happening. So what they often do when you go through it, it's really horrifying when they describe the different hell realms and the sufferings that go through there. But like I said, it doesn't have to happen to you. It's all avoidable. So like I say, like if you jump out of a plane without a parachute, well, we figure out what's going to happen, right? And you look down there and go, oh my gosh. Yeah, but look, it's not going to happen to you. We're going to put a parachute on your back, right? And I'm going to come down with you. Don't worry. You're fine. So for us, the parachute is Dharma, the virtuous mind that has to be created before you die. There's your parachute. There's your safety house. There's your refuge. The virtuous thought. Because it's the mind that creates your hell. Right? It's not external to you. So just as we create hellish situations for ourselves right here, same thing happens at the time of death. If you fear, if you over fear gets you, well, you know what happens, don't you? If you've ever been really scared, I mean, you're not very competent in how to behave. Hey, most people thrash around a lot, right? Trying to get out some way. What do they say in the natural born killers? There is no way out. That's right. So this is the idea to go through that sort of horror to go, I want to avoid it. If you don't know how horrible it could be, you might think of what, okay, I can deal with it. But nah, you won't. So another thing here is, so I've read, if you read Shani Gave the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, the questions asked there, like, who created the burning grounds of this hell? Mm-hmm. Where all these demons come from?
Where all these devil women?
Yeah, that's right. Well, from your own mind. So if you don't want them. And then I read this lovely book called Dalek, where this woman, Daleks are people who voluntarily go into this meditative state where, to all appearances, they're dead. And then they shut off the room and you can't go in there. And they'll say, I'll be back in about 2 weeks, 10 days or something like that, coming in. So the woman does it, and sure enough, what happens is she finds herself in hell. Right? And she's like the Lord of Death and Yavas, right? Then he's got these two henchmen. Get her, bring her up here. Right? So they do, and what he does is like, it's all metaphorical. So the Yava pulls out the mirror to look at her life. What have you done with your life? Wow, you've been a very good girl, he says. But when you were this age, you killed that, you took that egg from the bird's nest and you broke it. You took that life. You'll need to pay for that. So what does she do? Take refuge immediately, and the Lord of Death turns into Avalokiteshvara, and the two henchmen turn into the White Tara and the Green Tara. And I found, there you go. It's all mind. So, but that's the thing, though. You've got to, you've got to, you know, like come back to your mind, right? Go, geez, I've got to do something. And if any of you have ever tried dream yoga, and when you realize you're dreaming, right, man, the whole thing just stops. It's like it all goes frozen and you're free of it. You go, wow, like it is. It's like, you know, and before that, you thought it was all real. But yeah, so getting a lot of confidence from this sort of thing, you know. It's like, it's not out there, it's more like sort of in here. You can't even find it in here, can you? It depends. One is, yeah, to do this. And what's next? Now, the lower realms of refuge. So, a state of mind that is terrified of the sufferings of the lower realms is one of the two causes that produce the effect of going for refuge to the three jewels. And like I said, if you don't, you know, refuge is the actual refuge, I work in harmony with the Buddhist teachings of cause and effect. And as you know, virtue creates happiness in all the upper realms of happiness, and non-virtue creates the opposite. Now, this is also called renunciation, but it's there are two types of renunciation. This is the renunciation of the lower scope, and with which we turn our primary concern from the benefit of this life to benefiting future lives. And it's based on dread of worse rebirth and belief in the fact that the three jewels can lead us to a better rebirth. Of course, as you know, the three jewels, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the jewel here that really says is the Dharma jewel. But this, you know, the Dharma's virtue, it's true cessations, it's the path, it's the method. So this is the renunciation of the lower scope, a turning away from future suffering in these lower realms. The authentic renunciation of the middle scope is where you turn away from all the sufferings of samsara. And not just the sufferings of the lower realms, but the sufferings of the upper realms, where we find ourselves at present. And the second stage of renunciation, when we turn away from samsara altogether, that is exclusively Buddhist, whereas this one here is not. Because we know that Christians, for instance, don't want to find themselves in the lower realms, do they? Right? And their aim is for the heavenly realm. And same to any religion that believes it is a theistic religion. No one wants to have the worst outcome. So they behave as well as they can here, but it doesn't happen later. Okay, let's do meditation then. So let's get comfortable in the seat again. Please, like say, settle your body and let the body breathe itself. And while your body breathes itself, feel your weight upon the seat. And just release all attachment to the world of the senses. Now, just be present with what is. And now, just set an altruistic intention to transform the mind. Now, with all its many risks, this life endures no more than wind-blown bubbles in a stream. How marvelous it is to breathe in and out again, to fall asleep and then awake refreshed. And while this fragile human life is as transient as a candle flame in an unpredictable wind, its death is certain, but the time of departure is not. So how is it that we still enjoy eating, sleeping, and sensual pleasures while being closely watched over by the Lord of Death himself? And all our exits are blocked. So why is uncertainty of the time of death a vital starting point for our spiritual journey? That really forces us to prioritize what is truly meaningful before our death arrives, before this life finishes. To recollect that we cannot be sure which will come first, tomorrow or the next life. Therefore, don't put so much effort into tomorrow, but instead attend to the next life. So imagine that your final hour is here and the sense world is beginning to dissolve. You're lying on your deathbed. Your status, whatever riches you've accumulated, whatever good reputation you have, these are like borrowed clothes, now abandoned. Now only your inner character remains. And you must face the wretched results of non-virtuous karma. Are you ready? Do you know what to do? Do you think that the fear of the lower realms can be a useful motivation for your daily spiritual work? This fear is like an alarm clock. It wakes us up, helping us to abandon non-virtuous actions like right now. It helps us, it ensures that our mental stream remains pure and protected. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through the mouth, and keep your eyes wide open when you're ready. So now we've come to the topic of karma. And here this karma is really the karma to do with the 10 non-virtuous behaviors and the 10 virtuous behaviors. The practices for people of the small scope. And here Nagarjuna says, all sufferings are the result of unwholesome actions. So likewise are all bad rebirths. The pleasure enjoyed throughout our lives, all happy rebirths, are the result of virtue. And I say, this is what, you know, when they talk about the law of karma, this is it. Good produces good in terms of rebirth and other good, you know, the happiness of ordinary life. Non-virtue possesses at the time of death, produces suffering in the lower realms and all the problems that you get through ordinary life. This is the, you know, the law, they say, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's always that way. Yeah, like I said, this example is a good one, Sandy. You could easily see that a person could be hit by riding a bike, hit by a car, and get really upset that the car hit them, right? And be quite angry about this. Where the other person might have the same thing, be hit by the car, but so glad that they haven't broken their any limbs, right? There. And but I remember a thing like this happening to me. And I was so grateful that there were nurses to help you at the hospital. Man, I was lying out in the country road. They took me to a hospital. I woke up and there's a nurse sitting there talking to me. I'm going, man, this is like amazing. Who would have ever thought that could happen to you? And it is, don't you think? Yeah, there's. I'm so happy and grateful. But you know, the other guy, I wasn't, we were in different wards, but he was pretty upset that this car got wiped out. So, you know, that was his focus. It was like, oh my God, you know, blah, 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 the car, mine was something else. And you can see this again and again throughout your life. You'll notice yourself sometimes, you know, once you're upset at one thing, then now you're not so upset, it's the same thing. You know, there's not the slightest inconsistency in this natural process, this verse is saying. You should grasp this law of karma and its results clearly and with certainty. So this is called the correct mundane view. Emptiness is the correct supramundane view. That's right. Another way to look at this is in terms of the two truths. The right view is the absolute of the right view of the absolute truth is the realization of emptiness. The right view of phenomenal truth is a proper understanding of karma and its results. And this is the major thing to take away from it. You've got to get this in later on. If you go, knowing that, if you do something, it increases over time. So the effects are much larger than the cause. You know, it's just quite horrifying in terms of the bad stuff, but wonderful in terms of the good stuff. And what is karma? Well, karma, simply put, means action. And more specifically, it refers to the process of cause and effect where the intention of an agent or a being is involved. So if you have a look, we've got a number of books upstairs in the library there. One is by Charlie Gripache on karma. It's fantastic, but it's got the history of the change, you know, people's first conception of karma and how it changes, how it changed over time. So the Buddha brought into it the major change of karma was intention. Before that, I mean, you know, in India, ancient India, and even today, right, there are different perspectives of what karma is. So, for instance, the Hindus believe karma to be one type of thing. Really, the Buddhist schools also believe karma to be something, and others.
I think the Jains don't believe in the attention part.
Yeah, that's
right.
You
kill
that,
too bad.
Too bad. Oh, yeah, but they don't want to kill them, do they?
No, they don't want to kill them, but they just say whether you kill it, whether you intend it to or not.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No, it's killing. It's killing. It's done. Yeah, that's how it is. That's the original way and the old way. But and the Buddha, like I said, changed it and brought it into intention. You'll also see this in terms of the discussion in Buddha nature. It really shocked me when I went, I had no idea. They're like, whole concept has been changing over centuries. More and more, you know, philosophers and thinking at it and asking, relying on different texts again. And then you look a bit like, huh? But this is not unusual because we've got four different tenet systems, four different schools of thought within Buddhism. You know, and it's like us going to school, some are for kindergarten, some are for when you just start, you know. And then there's high school and university. So really, the university outlook is the middle way consequence point of view of karma, which is really difficult to get your head around. And some of the other schools are a little bit easier. So yeah, so when you read study karma, don't be surprised if you get, you know, you get overwhelmed by all the information coming in. But remember, it's just different perspectives, different ways of looking at it. Different lenses, so to speak. Yeah, so as Holiness says, here karma means an intentional act committed or carried out by a being who possesses a sentient nature and who is also capable of having a sentient experience. So sentient here means being with a consciousness. And this is what Alexander Berzin says about how karma is related to the Mayanomi school. Karma refers to the mental urges that bring us to act, speak, and think in compulsive ways. Acting out these urges, we reinforce our old habits. And as a result, we experience our moods going up and down and uncontrollably repeat our patterns of behavior. But these karmic results are not predetermined. They're not fixed. We can affect what we experience. So again, this is it's very helpful here. It's always to remember dependent arising and emptiness. Like karma exists, it's a dependent arising. The fact is the dependent arising of internal cause and effect. So it's naturally empty. It's a dependent arising, which means that can be changed. That's the most important thing to take away with the emptiness. It can be changed. And so that's why we have all these different practices, don't we? You know, to make sure we can alter the effect. So like we're all here, we've all done silly things, right? And you might think, well, have we all experienced the effect of those silly things? And I know myself, I haven't. And I don't want to either. So I do practices. Yeah, because like I said, imagine like you've got the seed and you put it in the ground, right? And you know the effect of that seed growing up has got to be a plant, right? Do you want that plant or not? If you do, nurture it. If you don't, kill it. You uproot it, you do something to stop it. That's same with us, same with the karma. We've got the causes there. We don't have to experience the effects if we do something about it. If we don't do anything about it, we will experience the effect. Yeah, so all feelings are karma. Right? So that all feelings are the result of karma. Yeah,
so,
all,
like, what would the
scene have been?
Or like,
yeah, it's hard to say, isn't it? Yeah, so you often see the text that the generalizations. So you can sort of say, oh, from this, we can infer that it was this. But it may not be the case because karma expands.
Right.
That's the thing, that's the tricky thing, right? Yeah, even in fact, you know, like, even having suffering itself doesn't mean to say that the suffering will continue, because if anyone looks at the Tom Lin practice, that's how it's based on. It's like, when you're already caught in suffering, what are you going to do? Well, in Tom Lin, say, use it, create more compassion. Yeah, so it's like, there you go, now this is a real great thing, isn't it? You've used a condition to create a great new cause, more compassion. That's always possible, as long as you've got the wherewithal to recognize it, and I go, oh, I could do this. I think that's the most wonderful thing about the Tom Lin practices, the giving and taking. There's a lot of sufferings we cannot avoid, but we can't avoid death. We can't, you know, we try to avoid sickness as much as possible. We know sometimes you just get sick. Now, when that happens, what are you going to do now? Now, how can you create positive karma? How can you create a new positive act from this? Well, one of the things you could always do is just look at the text and in Bodhisattva's Way of Life, for instance, in the patience chapter, there's a great part there where they talk about all the benefits of suffering. Right? And so when you find that, you go, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I should think too. Isn't this what's actually happening to me? And so, you know, use it skillfully. And that's only in the Mahayana, because in the lower schools, it's like, no, there's nothing good about suffering. You've got to get rid of it. Right? That's the thing. But here, like I said, Mahayana goes bigger. There's more methods, more wisdom involved. So you can use it skillfully. So karma basically means action. And the action, the primary one, is the cause, not the effect. We have the effects of karma, and although they're called karma, it's not actually the karma they mean, because karma is intention. And so this, the effect of a karma is the effect of an intention that was carried out. The second thing is, of course, these actions refer to every action of body, speech, or mind, which produces a result. Lastly, karma refers to the imprint made on the mind from actions motivated by delusion. Now, there's also positive karma and negative karma here. We're just focusing on the negative aspect of it, the negative karmas. And the fact that, yeah, most of the presentations too of karma is, it's like, whether it's good and bad, but it can keep you in cyclic existence. But this is not always the case. Right? You reach some of the higher grounds, then the stuff you do is actually contributing to liberation, not the cyclic existence. Yes.
Kate's commented, I'm assuming the intention for attempting to amend the consequences of the karma can make it a difference also.
Ah, yeah, for sure. Definitely, Kate. Must do. Yeah. So what does Lama Tsongkhapa say about this? He says, finding firm and definite conviction in this law of karma, please bless me always to be careful to abandon even the slightest negativity and accomplish all virtual states. So I think this takes a while, of course. If you ask yourself, what is the creator of unhappiness, suffering? And what is the creator of, like, happiness in higher realm rebirths, all these sort of things? Right? Well, if you're looking for the positive side, the creator of that is a disciplined mind. It's the mind that you choose, you set the intentions. That's the discipline, to always intend something yourself with the mind. This will take quite a bit of work, and you do it again and again until what will happen is you won't need to do it because the mind will naturally do it. You habituate the mind. You start, it's not easy. After a little while, it's easier, and it's really easy. It's just like, Debbie, you know how to drive a car, don't you? It's pretty easy, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Now it is. Never used to be. And that's just how karma decided too. Start off, it's not so easy, but you habituate yourself to it, now it's easy. So the thing is here is like, you know, to make it easy to create positive states of mind and easy to abandon the negative states of mind. It becomes easier to abandon the negative if you realize that the person who suffers most by them is you. So every time you do it, you poison yourself. Or it's like, you know, getting angry at something, they say pick up a hot coal to throw at him, the first person to get burnt is you. That's what happens. That's how that thing works. And if you can convince yourself that this is the case, well, you go a long way now. Because that's what we're meant to do. Convince ourselves that the teachings of Buddha's cause and effect are correct, that they work. Kunu Lama Rinpoche says, in other words, please bless me always to be careful in the practice of avoiding the 10 non-virtuous actions and observing the 10 virtuous ones. This is the most important point for putting a safe direction in our lives, it's refuge, is to very carefully mould our behaviour in accordance with the laws of behavioural cause and effect. You know, it's that other slide, right? We know all happiness comes from a virtuous mind, and all high states of rebirth come from that virtuous mind. All sufferings come from a non-virtuous mind, and so do all the higher realms and the lower realms. That's what we've got to hold in mind. I don't want that, I do want this.
It's actually very straightforward.
Yeah, this is it. Yes, it is. Like, it's just like cause and effect. There's all those examples in nature show it works like this in nature, and now it works the same in the mind. It's the same thing.
Your afflicted emotions sometimes
control what you do.
Oh, right, that's for sure.
A lot of it.
That's right, yeah. And this is one of the things that, you know, the great suffering is that we don't have control. Our afflictions have control over us. That's why I was saying, well, we have to be disciplined to go, okay, I know that my afflictions are going to lead me into trouble. They always have done, that's what they do. Oh, I have to stop that now. So the first thing to do is afflictions, like I say, are primarily like mental, right? But then it's hard to work there. You just start working with the body then. It's easy. Don't kill anybody. Don't steal from anywhere. Don't engage in sexual misconduct. That's easy. Then the speech, a little harder. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. Just like that. Right? Then, now you've disciplined yourself on what not to do. You now discipline yourself in this new thing. Instead of taking life, save life. Instead of stealing and taking what's not yours, be generous and give to others. Instead of stealing other people's or the companions or being involved in that sort of thing, encourage harmony between couples. Now, you just find the opposite of each one. You know, instead of speaking so harshly, strain, and when I speak, try to be gentle, try to be kind. Yeah, so this is, if you really try to give up a habit, a lot of people have given up smoking and other things, right? It's not easy, are it?
No.
Not at all. And not only do you have to stop doing it, what's really helpful once you stop doing it?
To replace it with something that's beneficial.
There you go. That's the activity. You find the things that harm you, drop them, and then just don't go into a neutral state because the craving will get you, right? You don't have anything new. So you put in the new behavior. Now you've got something, and now you familiarize yourself with that. Over time, it becomes a stronger. And especially if you use reason, like I said, well, just look at all these afflictions and what happens when I kill, steal, blah, blah. What are the consequences? You know what they are. Okay, do you want that to happen to you? You'll probably go, no. Well, there you go. But like I said, it's not easy, eh? You do all the reasoning. You try and give up a habit. That's hard work. There's good outcomes if we can.
Just for me, I'm doing all this eating food.
Yeah.
And but I don't, what I realize is like I just felt myself, I just want to be happy. That's what's driving it. Like that's what's driving me to eat food at night. Yeah. It's like I just don't want to feel.
That's right. No, that's right. So we do something else that produces another form of suffering. Isn't it? Yeah, and the happiness, what type of happiness is that? Yeah, well, samsaric happiness. The happiness of my aggregates feel satisfied. Have they ever been fully satisfied? Yeah, no. Did they ever will be? No. I think one of the things that's gonna happen, I'm just gonna like get sick and tired of it.
And also sick and tired of not getting the desired result of happiness. Like I'm doing this to be happy, it's not what it does. No. So it's faulty logic or something.
Yeah, I remember this time that one time, so I used to be a needle using drug addict, and Kensa Rinpoche said in class, you use drugs? Because no one is saying, yeah. Of course we do. Yeah. You should say this. So the stuff you use, I was like powder or something. Yeah. Just, so how can something physical make you mentally happy? How can something physical be the substantial cause for happiness? And I just went, it can't. And that there really helped me to go, I'm not doing that stuff again. Want to be happy. What do you do? Well, Ben eats. It's a physical thing. How can a physical substance be a substantial cause for happiness? It can't. It has to turn into a mental state. It doesn't.
Are we making this like...
I know, we're making the jumps.
There might have been a time in my life where I ate and I did feel happy, which was a mental Yeah. Yeah. Become rock and roll associated.
The food is eating.
With, and now I think, oh, yeah. Well, that's not my food, that's going to happen, but it's the wrong
thing. No, it's not. Yeah. So that's like a correlation, isn't it? It's not false.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. So we trip ourselves up with correlations, but they actually, and think they're causes, but in fact, they're not.
The actual cause that happened to what I was eating, maybe minded generosity in the previous.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now we'll look at one of the karmas, so this is the karma of killing, and we're going to look at some of the results, because the way you stop engaging unskillfully is by looking at the result of what happens. Right? And you go, yeah, I don't want that sort of result. So here there are a number of results, and one of the biggest one is not here. So I'll just say that first, but I'll put these up, right? So the fruitional result of killing is
rebirth
in the lower realms. That's right. So usually in the hellish realms. So that's the fruitional result. These other results on the front are not those. They're other forms of result. But the worst one is rebirth of the hell realm. So if you're not reborn in the hell realm and find yourself reborn as a human being, that, like we are, right? So we go, okay, virtuous, that was a result of virtue, that I'm reborn as a human being. Nevertheless, I've killed insects and animals and whatever, right? What might be the effects that I could experience as a human being? That's what we're looking at. So the first is what they call the possessed effect or the possessed result. It is even when the good karma ripens and you're reborn as a human being, you still suffer and you have many problems in life, including many dangers. And the example I give is like perhaps you're confronted by a snake. Perhaps you're driving in a car and you might have an accident. Perhaps you're walking along and the earthquake takes place. So, you know, there's plenty of dangers about as a human being. First, what you find yourself is you find yourself in dangerous situations. The next one is about the environment. So here you find yourself living in places where there are lots of contagious diseases, there are obstacles to your health. You find many health obstacles, basically. You find there'll be many stories of, you know, when people say, they talk about, innocent children, for instance, like a child is born, they haven't done anything wrong, and then they die. And it seems unexplainable. But if you have to understand it's karma, then it's explainable. But if it's not, it's like, what do people say? It's not fair. But see, karma doesn't have anything to do with fairness. Yes. Yeah, but hang on. So you're talking about two streams of karma here. One is the person who died and the other people who respond to that. So this one here, we're talking about the person who died.
But that could have been a bodhisattva teaching them a lesson. You know, like I'm trying to look at the good parts of it because I just can't accept that.
Whether that's the case or not, that's if that's the case, like I said, we don't know. Right? Now, if you want to infer that, go for it. Well, that's what I'm saying. The thing itself has no intrinsic meaning. Right? There's no intrinsic meaning in a death because we have to give the death meaning. Right? So it's a period. Here it's just sort of saying, like, you're going to find yourself in a place where it's a lot of trouble. Like, for instance, in the Middle East and many, many places, many, many places all over the world. Even in, everywhere, basically, isn't it? You can find yourself as you've got this life as a human being, but the place you're living in, your environment, it's dangerous. Now, here are the two really interesting ones I find. The experience. So
So experience here is basically you experience a result which is related to the cause. So because you killed yourself, because you actually took the life of somebody, your life was taken. That's the result. So this is one of the ones where they say that when your children die very young, and it's, you know, it's really Jesus, you know, the pain that just causes people, because it's like it's unfair. You don't know why. You know, we want to know why. But sometimes, you know, doctors might say, well, these are the physical causes for it. And you go, yep, that's right. What's the mental cause? And of course, no one knows. Right? So right from a Buddhist perspective, this is a result that must be similar to the cause. So in previous life, the it's not the baby that did it, right? It's the person appeared to the mental continuum. In some previous life, that person took the lives of somebody else. And now they're experiencing the effect. Yeah, it's, like I said, it's cause and effect. It's just cause and effect.
Everything comes from random and chaos.
Yeah, that's right.
They're here to that principle.
Yeah. And of course, so this is the experience, but the one I found really interesting was just the behavior. So, you know, you also know, don't you, this children who come this life, and they do some absolutely horrifying things. And it's like, why? What the heck? Nothing bad about the parents. Parents aren't bad people and encouraging them to do this, yet there are kiddies who grow up and they love to torture and kill animals and insects, first of all. Then they move up to bigger beings. And that's like, where did all that come from? And from Buddhist perspective, you go, past causes. You have an effect, there must be a cause. Effects take place or results. What's the cause? So what happens for us in the West is we're always looking in this life for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
They go, it's hard to find those.
Often you can see something in this life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But there's others where you, like, you can't. The younger they are, it's like, gee.
When I lived in Sri Lanka, one of the places I stayed for a long time was with a family, and there was a little girl about 5 years old. Really gorgeous little thing. And whenever it rained, when she heard the rain, she would go into hysterics of screaming and go and crawl under the bed. And this was a really peaceful Buddhist family. The father's a doctor. She's really well looked after. There's no contemporary cause for her to be so phobic and freaked out about the sound of rain, which happens every afternoon. And she would just send her off, and her mum's explanation was it must be something from a past life.
Yeah, it's sort of useful, isn't it, in a way, to think that, you know, because otherwise it's like it seems to have no cause whatsoever. It's like chaos, it's anything can happen. And imagine that, if you thought that anything could happen, right? You'd become even more afraid, wouldn't you? More scary. Right? But if you think, oh, that's a cause, you go, okay.
Or get stuck with a Freudian psychoanalysis telling you everything's to do with your parents.
Yeah,
well, that's not life.
Very good. So we'll cut out this interesting part because we're just about on time and we'll do this last meditation. So again, just be comfortable in the seats. We're just sort of settling into a posture of relaxed alertness. We now set an altruistic intention to find a safe direction for the benefit of all beings. So imagine your final hour. And your only currency is your own inner ethical integrity. Future rebirths are determined by the law of karma. Ignoring this leads to the lower realms, where negative seeds ripen into agonizing suffering. We need to act now, because this human life is as fragile as dew on a leaf in the morning sun. So what distinguishes a spiritual practitioner from one focused only on this current temporal life? So what's the difference between a Dharma practitioner and an ordinary person who's only concerned with the happiness of this life? And the practitioner prioritizes future lives over the temporary comforts and status of the present. They view their status, their wealth, and so on as merely borrowed clothes that have to be returned. So how do intentional acts shape the environment and experiences of our next life? How do our intentional acts shape the environment and experiences in our next life? My virtuous actions build positive potential, while destructive ones lead directly to rebirth in the lower realms. And these karmic results follow the mind everywhere, like a shadow follows the body. So why do you think constant vigilance against these negative mental urges are necessary for a safe and happy direction in life? Why is constant vigilance against negative mental urges necessary to have a safe and happy direction in life? So compulsive negative habits repeat cycles of pain. Try to vigilantly abandon even the slightest negativity this evening to mold a safe direction for yourself. Your life of virtue is a journey taken without fear. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale. So these have been the practices of a beginner we've talked about, in what they call the initial scope or initial capacity, small capacity. Now we know verses 3 and 4 of this foundation practice. So in the meantime, any material you can on the lower scope. Next week we're looking at verses 5 and 6, and for these, talk about the capacity of those of middling scope. So this is that. Thank you again for attending classes and engaging with the teaching. Please dedicate our virtue to enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, no increase forevermore. And as long as the space remains, as long as the sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. his prayer for his, the long life of His Holiness. The wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world, to the incomparably kind kingdom that I receive, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And lastly, the prayer for the swift return of Rupa Shah. In holding and spreading the Moon's precious and complete teachings through exploration and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable Bengal Guru, to you, I make this request.